Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to The Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Very excited about today's show. We're kind of kicking off our draft coverage here in earnest on The Athletic Football Show. And by doing that, we're going to introduce the format that we're going to have every single Thursday. Essentially, me globbing on to the Prospects to Pros show that you guys have been listening to for the last 6 months. I'm the one that's weaseling my way in here. Joining the two guys who have done a fantastic job on that show, first and foremost, my good friend, Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I love this. I'm back into the kind of finisher scorer role as opposed to, passing. Okay, I got to set up Dane here, Okay, sit in the corner. Okay, good job, Dane. So this is a lot more comfortable to seeing Robert going back into here. And it's just like, I just get to spout these tangents, but we get to be with Dane actually.
Well, funny you should mention that, because the other person joining us today and joining us every week in the run-up to the draft, it is our draft expert at The Athletic, Dane Brugler. Dane, very good to be back on a show with you, my friend. I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, this is going to be fun. We've got just over a month left, which is crazy. And peek behind the curtain. This is kind of the worst two-week stretch of my entire year, the final 2 weeks before the draft guide. So, most of the hay's in the barn at this point, but it's all about the injury info's coming in. Staying on top of the pro days, there's going to be pro day information for over 1,500 players in the draft guide. So staying on top of all of those, which that's what the month of March is all about, is the pro days and all those times. So, getting those times from teams, not going by what the school says or media, anything like that. So, recording this pod will be a nice change up from, watching Division II tape with bounce house castles blocking the camera and all that. So this will be fun.
It was funny. Somebody on Twitter yesterday was just like, why would you not have Dane on the show 6 weeks before the draft? Because you weren't on last week. And I was like, maybe you should talk to Dane about whether or not he actually didn't want to be on the show last week. He's got 10 million things to do.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No, and trust me, I listened to you guys and I'm like, man, I should be on this. Why? But there's only so many minutes and hours in the day. We're close. Well, draft guide will almost be done and then it'll be... we can really get cranking.
And it's like you're single too. You're a bachelor, all that too. It's not like you have four kids.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's not like you got dance tonight, indoor soccer, all that good stuff.
And you transition usually the showtime into meeting them at the bus, right? So it's always perfect. Like the recording time transitions, right? You're a pro. You get it.
Wasted time.
None. It's just boom, boom, boom. Former athlete, former player going from meeting to meeting. I totally get it.
This is a very familiar stretch in the calendar for me. You finishing up the draft guide and us kicking off our draft coverage here on the Athletic Football Show. And the way that we've done that pretty much every year since 2021, I remember the first time we did this was my kitchen table in my old apartment. But in those 3 years, not a lot has changed. You guys are plugged into the draft discourse and have been for a very long time. I am not. I've been paying attention to free agency, combine stuff, going to owners' meetings later this weekend. So this is my chance to ask some very dumb questions from people who know a lot more about this draft class than I do. So this is what we're doing today. We are doing the Idiot's Guide to the 2024 NFL Draft. This is now our fourth one, Dane, which is kind of hard to imagine at this point.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny how these things evolve. The draft conversation and how every draft has its own identity. And this one is certainly unique with the strengths of what we have at the top, the quarterbacks. I mean, it's almost like your kids. They're each a little bit different. They have their own personalities. And yeah, this year's no different.
So let's start with some of that big picture stuff. Nate, how would you compare this class just on a very, very zoomed out level to previous draft classes that we've seen maybe over the last 4, 5, 6 years?
Is this the savior of offense class? That's what this class really feels like. It feels like as the NFL truly hit a nadir in offense last year, and as far as production, efficiency, explosion, now we have, I mean, I was just telling Dane this. I just did a big board for Yahoo. My top 13 guys in this draft on this big board were offensive players, offensive tackle, receiver, and quarterback. And I think that is, those are premium positions of offense. Oh, and one tight end. But those are premium positions of offense. Those are pass catchers. That is the signal callers, the true quarterback and the offensive lineman. So these are the guys, these are the positions that teams are always trying to find. And this is where there's depth at those positions. You know, depends on how you consider the depth, but there is at the turn around the late first round, the second round as well. But it's a very offensive heavy draft, especially at those spots. You know, running back, tight end are a different story. And then on defense, there are some holes, there are some gaps, but there are some interesting players more in the middle, later tiers of the first round, the second round. And so that is how this class, kind of the flavor of this class, has kind of unfolded the last couple months.
There were some offensive linemen drafted fairly early on last year, but last year, famously, we didn't get our first wide receiver until 21. It's just a different sort of flavor than the one that this class seemingly has. Beyond just the flavor of the players, Dane, and the positions, what sort of quality are we talking about here? You know, I remember in the pre-draft discourse, there's always a lot of, well, there are this many first-round grades with this year's class. In terms of overall quality, how do you think the 2024 group compares to recent ones?
Obviously, yeah, the number of first-round grades changes team to team, and I think it's a really good class. Probably around 20 true first-round grades, which is more than, I think, usual. But I do always struggle with the question like this, because it's, you know, a certain player is a first rounder for one team and not for another. You know, obviously there's probably a dozen guys that are going to be consensus first rounders no matter the scheme or the team that you talk to. But a player like Amarius Mims from Georgia, offensive tackle, who in my opinion is the most fascinating player in the draft, because there are some teams who, if they focus just on the traits, oh, this is an easy top 20 player. Other teams that value body of work and are looking for someone that maybe can step in right away, they're not going to have a first round grade on a guy like Mims. So the number of first rounders will obviously be different from team to team, but this is a really good class to be drafting top 10, top 12. And we can't say that every year. It's a good mix of the blue chippers, but then also guys that maybe you don't love, but you feel really, really good about and would have no problem drafting them in the first round. So a really good year to have a first round pick, especially in that top 20 range.
Nate, when you've done your mock drafts, is there a pick somewhere in the 20s or maybe a little bit later in the first round where you feel yourself getting less excited, where you think there is a little bit of a cliff or a fall off with the talent?
Yeah, and it's right around there, the early 20s, maybe, like 22, 23, 24, right before we did kind of our show, going over, you know, 32 through 26 or 24, or whatever it was. But that is where the cliff, and that's actually kind of traditional. Once you hit the 20s, you know, usually teams break it down. Guys are 20 to 40 type grade, a late first, early second type guy. So that is kind of that's kind of what I see when I do these mocks. And I would agree with Dane. I have 17 guys as I always kind of round down. So if a guy, I'm like, is he a blue chipper? Is he a green chipper? Is he very good? Is he good? I round down. So I'll say, oh, he's good, as opposed to very good. But I have 17 guys as legit first round graded guys, which to me is pretty high. Sometimes you get into that, I think Dan would agree, 15 to 20 is generally the landing spot, but 17 is pretty good. And I could bump that up to 19 if I were getting kind of frisky. But I just want to kind of go off of Dane, what Dane's saying. This is a rich class. And again, it's mostly offense, but there are some defensive guys too. But I think when you just look at this, that once you get to that 20 spot, 22 spot, maybe, and maybe some guys are bump up as those blue chippers as well, that is where I see a little bit of drop off and maybe different types of players come up.
Houston Texans picking 23rd got out of there. So that might tell you kind of exactly what they were thinking. Like, we feel good about the guy we're getting at 23 as we are, you know, someone in the early second round. So I think that right around that early 20s that we're talking about
great
makes
point.
Sense.
That's such a great point.
We talked about the offense being the strength of this draft, but if we dig a little bit deeper, which positions do you feel are the most stacked in this class, Dane, compared to previous ones?
Got to start with the offensive line, right? I mean, it's hard to quantify maybe how this stacks up with other offensive line classes, but it's got to be in the conversation of one of the better ones we've seen the last decade. And it's refreshing because it's lived up to expectations. Back in the summer when I was doing my initial top 50, I had 8 offensive tackles make the top 50. And for the most part, those guys have not only lived up to it, they've helped themselves.
Yeah, you push them up. It feels like there's 8 guys that are like in the top 30 now.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think you think of that 2020 class, right? With that we had six tackles in that first round, Andrew Thomas, Tristan Wirfs, that group. This chance, we might have six in the top 25, easy. And the other thing with this offensive line class, because I'm going to group the whole offensive line together. Yes, the offensive tackles, it's a top-heavy group. But I think what makes this offensive line group really special is the guard and center depth. The tackles, it's a top-heavy position. The position kind of drops off a cliff maybe after the top 40 or so. On the interior, those positions, they're going to stretch. So when we look back, you know, 3 years from now, I think easily we'll find double-digit NFL starters on the interior coming out of this class.
Well, your guy Christian Haynes, Nate, I mean, we're talking about the guard depth here. It seems like you like a lot of these guys even more so than some of the other people that are stacking them up right now.
Yes, that's the best part, and Dane touched on it, is that there's a lot of high-end talent, but there's a lot of interesting talent. There's more project types, too, that usually sneak up, and we talked about this, Robert, the other day. Those guys sometimes would sneak up into the top 20 in a normal draft, and now those guys might get bumped down 25, 28, 31. I would say a Jordan Morgan would be a good one. A Kingsley Suomata-Tia. I'm getting there. Tyler Guyton. Actually, those three. Those are the three I always
From Arizona.
Arizona. And then you got BYU for Suomata-Tia. And then you got Guyton from Oklahoma. And all three of those guys have traits that you want. And Morgan has positional flexibility as far as guard tackle, potentially. And the other two have legit left tackle upside, starting left tackle upside, which is what you want. Again, those guys, I've seen worse talents bumped up way high in draft than these guys. And these guys are currently getting slotted in 20s and 30s. And I just think that's what speaks to the depth. And also what Dan was saying too, is that there's a lot of interior guys, but there's three centers. There's two legit kind of center types that could be in the first round. And then a third, Zach Frazier, that could probably maybe sneak in there, but more of an early second round type. So there is just, yeah, and then you have versatile guys. You have Troy Fontenot, who could play potentially all five spots. Graham Barton, who could play all five spots. You have guys that could swing guard and tackle. It's just any flavor you want in this class, the high-end tackles, the versatile guys, the interior guys, that you got every type of flavor, the projects. That's why this class is so cool at a position that's so hard to find talent.
Dan, you do such a good job of being able to contextualize this stuff over time, just because you're doing this in depth every single year. Do you think this means anything, the fact that we have eight tackles that could go in the first round? Or do you see this as more of a blip than anything indicative of a larger trend?
I really do think it is just kind of one of those years. I don't know that there's any science behind why this year there's a spike. Obviously, all 32 teams need offensive line help, and that's something that pushes names up, but it doesn't feel like names are being artificially pumped up in this group. It feels like they're legitimately top 32 players and guys we should be talking about in the first round. So I don't know that there is as much any theories behind it as it is just one of those classes, that a really good class of offensive linemen.
Anton Harrison feels like he was one of those guys on the border last year, right? Like maybe he gets pushed up a little bit into the end of the first round because that cliff is coming and teams have a need, but you don't think that there's going to be that many guys shoved a little bit higher up than they should be this year.
It's like a Patrick Paul from Houston. Say he goes 32. You know, like I think that'd be a little bit early for him. And it's because he's long. It's, you know, he's got a lot to work with, but he's not ready to play tomorrow. And it's a little bit of a project. But talking about that cliff, once those guys start coming off the board, if we see that run and a team starts to worry about, okay, you know, where are our options to tackle in second, third round, you could at least understand why, okay, maybe he's not our top ranked player on the board, but we have a second round grade on him and it's not a huge stretch for us. So yeah, we'll take him at 32. That would feel a little bit like, okay, we're pushing it, but the rest of these guys, no. I think you can make the argument why they belong as top 25 players in this class, both the tackles and then also the interior guys. Graham Barton, I mean, if he ends up going, top 25, that you understand why. It might not be the flashiest player, but the versatility that he offers, he's just a really good player. Faitanu from Washington, tackle, guard, I don't care. Wherever you like him, he's one of the top 20 players in this draft. You cannot name me 20 better players than him. So even with these guys, it's the position they play, gives them that little bit of a bump. but it feels like their play, what they do put on tape, that it gets them this high in the rankings more than anything else.
Nate, do you have a favorite guy among this group? And if you want to, you can differentiate between the guys who are like definitive top 12 talents and maybe some of the more projecty guys, if you want to draw that line.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm stealing some of Dane's thunder. No, I'll go with different. Actually, this is legit hard for me because there's so many good players. Like that, this is hard. These are all legit guys that I really like. Because Amarius Mims, I don't want to steal that from you, Dane. So I'm going to go with it. Correct my name pronunciation on him. It's not Fontenu. It's, God dang it, Faotanu. Oh my God. All right. So, wow, that's great. All right. Troy Faotanu. Him, the guy whose name I don't even know how to say apparently this entire time, who I've been singing his praises for like 6 months now. He probably...
I've said it wrong too, so...
Yeah. Oh, man. Me. Well, that I go off you, man. It's like, if I say it and you confirm, I'm like, all right, we're good. We're good. This is the beast. We're good. But no, I have to go with him. Him and Barton, really. Because of the five positional versatility I could see with him, he's a guy at first I was like, you're not going to be able to stay at tackle. I love your movement. I love all this. He has long arms. He has very long arms, 34 and a half, I believe. And he's not all 6'4". He's just a shade under. But his movement ability, his technician ability, or his ability to be a technician, I just love it. Like, he translates so easily to me in my mind. That's like, could he stay at left tackle? I don't know. I could see him at right tackle. But him as a guard, and even just him as a center, it's just like easy to project him as like, oh yeah, you're going to be a good player no matter what. And just his hand usage, his footwork, his eyes are all very advanced. So he's a guy that's like, a lot of coaches, I think, are going to like him. I personally just really like him because of all that technique and stuff.
You have Faotanu at 10 on your big board that came out today, Nate, on Yahoo, which is very high. That compares to 17th for Faotanu with Dane. You have Graham Barton at 12 from Duke,
yes,
on yours, Nate. And he's a little bit further down for you, Dane, but I know that you also like him and consider him just like a definitive first round player.
No doubt. And I mean, and I haven't updated my ranking since before the combine. So I'm probably even a little bit higher than what I just seeing these guys in person at the combine really helps the movement skills. Just in comparison purposes, one after the other, after the other, it's really helpful just to see how explosive they are, the body control, all of that. But yeah, all of these guys, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard question to just say one name because there's so many. Amarius Mims going back.
That's why
to
I'm making
the summer,
you do it.
I did four honorable mentions before I got to mine because I just want to make sure it's like, hey, I like all these guys. Just making sure we're checking these boxes.
right. Going back to the summer, texting with Nate about these tackles, and I remember texting him and saying, hey, I got a guy, and like this guy is the freakiest of the freaks, and check out the Ohio State tape, Amarius Mims, Georgia, and there's not many guys like this now. Again, 8 career starts, some questionable stuff on the board work. You worry about, okay, the fundamentals, are they going to be there for him to get on the field? How quickly, all of that. But he just moves differently. And I've never seen a guy 340 pounds carry it that well. Never seen it before. It is crazy how he is built. And everything's been so easy for him that once he gets to the NFL, that's not going to be the case, obviously. And so how does he adjust? That's a big kind of question mark with his evaluation.
So this is, let me pull the idiot's guide thing here and let me be the idiot for a second. Why only 8 starts? Like, what kept him off the field for this long? I know Georgia's had some guys. Broderick Jones comes through there. Is it injuries? Is it a maturity thing? Like, why is it only 8?
I mean, both tackles in front of him got drafted last year. And so once, and he's a former 5-star guy, came in with a ton of pedigree. He actually took a visit to Florida State last offseason thinking about transferring because he wanted to get on the field. But he got on the field against Ohio State in the playoff game. That was his first career start because Warren McClendon, the right tackle, got hurt. So he goes out there, plays exceptionally well.
Looked like the best player on the field.
In the national title game. Yeah, right, exactly. And then this year, stays at right tackle, starts, and then he got hurt, had an ankle injury. And so that was really the main reason why it's only 8 starts. But again, it's not the body of work you want, but still, when that type of talent, you just have to figure out, okay, how far behind is he just in terms of processing, in terms of understanding everything we need him to know to play tackle, to at least be on the field and not hurt us. So, and that the answer to that question is going to be different for every team. I do think we have to mention Joe Wald here because he is a guy that Nate and I both, we were on the same page with him in the summer. We liked him, didn't love him. We saw a guy that was probably a first round pick, but there were some question marks there.
Had the same grade on Barton as I did on Ault going into the fall. That's legit.
And he is a guy that is a good example of someone that separated himself throughout the season. You know, when we...
What did that for you?
Pop.
I think it goes back to... So the best offensive linemen, when you scout the position, the best offensive linemen are able to reset, quickly get back to the strengths of their bodies. And to me, that's what he was able to do consistently this year that he wasn't always able to do in the past. So that's what he does best, really. It's his ability to recover, get back to his power, and not lose balance. And I think for him, it's going back to his background. He grew up as a quarterback. You know, his dad was a left tackle in the NFL in the early 90s, but he wanted his son to be an athlete. So he played quarterback most of his life. In high school, he was a linebacker, then a defensive end, then he was a tight end. It wasn't until his senior year that he got some looks at tackle and then goes to Notre Dame. And so that was only 4 years ago that he got his first real looks as an offensive tackle. So I guess it's not a surprise to see him take these jumps, but the improvements he made year over year, really impressive. And that gives you optimism moving forward that he's not done. He's very good in the run game. There's some things in pass pro where he'll extend a little bit too far, reach a little bit too far. His anchor, because he is so tall, there's some cracks in his anchor, but this is a guy that figures out a way. Again, finding his balance, it being able to recover, it's something that a lot of these tackles can't do.
And Joe, what we're talking about here, the testing was obviously very good, that of a former tight end and linebacker and position player. He ran a 5.05 in the 40 at 321 in an 88th percentile broad jump. So
he's over
a lot
6'8".
Of good stuff happened there. Yeah, 6'8 and change, 6'8 and a half.
Somebody looked it up on Twitter because we mentioned it, but his closest like physical and testing comparisons is Jonathan Ogden. So that's what we're talking about.
Heard of him.
That's pretty good.
Dane and I texted this summer and I was like, hey, I'm seeing Ault get bumped up and I really like Barton. That's like my other, I want to make sure we get that out here. Who's a guy that his tackle tape is way better than I even gave him credit for. And that when I rewatched him, and also his length is like another guy, but I want to make sure I say Barton's really good too, guys. But watching Ault, it's like, okay, he doesn't really have a lot of pop with his hands. He doesn't really strike guys and move guys for especially a guy that big. So that was kind of leaving me wanting more. And this is also one of the things where I get out ahead of myself. I'm like, oh yeah, he's 20. Oh yeah, he's just learning he's a Great Dane that's just learning his body right now. And this season, you see it more. It wasn't all consistent. It wasn't like he's a road grader, but you saw the tight hands. You saw the movement. And then you see him pass protection. The recover ability is exactly what it is. Why I like him, and I think everybody likes him, because he's such a good athlete, because he's so long.
Even in the run game, I was watching the film breakdown that he did, watching his own tape with Brandon Thorne on his Substack, which I would highly recommend people do. And his ability to stick on guys in the run game when he was slipping off or they'd slip off him, you just see that like flexibility manifest in a lot of different areas of his game.
The number one thing I've ever learned from my dad and a lot of line coaches is a good athlete, offensive line, yes, the testing and all that, but it's, are they on the ground in the run game? Are they finishing and falling over themselves because the guy jumps out of the way? Are they like tripping over themselves? Are they unable to sustain? Because you see good athletes like a Trevor Penning, who's all, he tested like crazy, but then on the field, he doesn't test or play to that testing. But
there's not a level of control that you want.
Yes, not Ault. Not Ault is sticky. He stays on it. The guy tries to throw him off. He can keep his feet. Like, that's real athleticism at the position. He has it.
It's rare. It really is for that size. The recovery skills, the redirect, and there's a discipline to what he's doing too. You know, it's very natural to him, but you can tell how much he works at it. Because because he is fundamentally sound, but he also has the physical traits because he can sink. He can use every inch of his long arms to make him go to work. And so, yeah, there's just a lot. You can understand why Joe Ault's the clear favorite to be that first tackle drafted.
I think we're talking about positional strength. Receiver is also going to be in there, but we're going to get to that in a little bit. Let's get to the position you think are weakest, Dane. Is there a spot where if you're looking at a player at that position, you're probably going to be a little bit disappointed in the first round?
In the first round, there's no doubt. I think you look at linebacker. There's some linebackers in this class that I like, but not until the second round, not until in the third round. Overall, it's just not a great group.
It's kind of how last year was too, right?
It's been a trend, yeah. I think, the last few years. And really, I think the positions we're going to mention for this category, it's kind of been a trend with safety, with kind of the nose tackle types, with linebackers. It's not been a strong group for those guys the last few years. And this year is not any different. Now, again, there are some quality players, but not until you get to back half of the top 50 into the third round. That's where, and it would be interesting if see if some of those guys get pushed up, maybe just based off of need. And you know, you really have your target. You're targeting one of these guys. You don't want to miss them, so you take them a little bit earlier than you should. That I'm sure that'll happen with some of these guys. But yeah, in the first round, not a great year to if you want those three positions, nose tackle, linebacker, safety.
Linebacker and safety, we've talked a lot about this, Nate, where it's hard to evaluate those players in college. It's hard to know what traits are going to translate. So waiting a little bit and having the league figure it out for you has been something a lot of teams have done, using free agency at linebacker and safety. So do we think that these guys getting pushed into the second and third round is just a product of talent, or do you also think this is a downstream effect from how the league is viewing these sorts of players?
I think both in a way. I think the linebacker one's so hard. I like your phrase there, let the league figure it out for you. I think linebacker's the number one for that right now, because there's some of these guys are converted safeties, 226 pounds, 232 pounds. Can they last 3-4 years? Oh, he did at his previous stop. All right, now we can sign him in free agency. Now we're good. Okay, but we didn't check out and wait and figure it out. I think it's some of that with the safety is definitely, I see that where teams are going, we can just find this guy in the third round, even if he is good, or this guy in the second round, we have him comparable. Why invest such a rich pick? Kyle Hamilton is such a different animal than these other safeties. I think that's why the one guy that's kind of like the exception to this. So I think there is some deflation, but I also just want to say, talking about both sides of my belts, I'm saying that there hasn't been the talent worth these types of picks.
How those are connected. I wonder if guys are being funneled away from that. It's worth a larger conversation, but I think that we are starting to notice a trend in that direction.
The irony to me is how teams want to play defense right now with lighter boxes, and they need these positions. They need defensive tackles, linebackers, and safeties to fill the box. And now there's not a talent injection. You know, it's a weird thing going on right now. And maybe it's because once they get to the NFL, okay, this guy can play safety, this converted corner, and this guy's best as a dime backer, and we keep him in the yada, yada, yada. But as far as injection of talent into the league, it hasn't correlated with what's going on scheme wise, as far as what teams want to use. It's kind of a funny, you know, dichotomy.
We're zooming out a little bit further than we need to here, but I think that if you look at where the best players at these positions are coming from, I can't remember who it was, somebody from PFF, I think it was Arjun, posted this week about where the top paid defensive tackles in the league come from. And almost every single one of them, to a man, was a first round pick. Almost every single one. The only two exceptions were like Justin Matabike and maybe like one more guy. Everyone else was a first round pick. Well, let's apply that same thinking to linebacker and safety. At one point, Fred Warner reset the market and Justin Simmons reset the market. Where were those guys drafted? They were third round picks. So I think that inevitably this stuff is going to start influencing the way that we talk about these positions, think about these positions, and where guys look for these positions.
Quincy Williams.
Yeah.
Mario Davis.
All that stuff. I mean, it just feels like those guys are going to be available.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code The Athletic. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Dane, if you have a bunch of picks in that second and third round range, maybe those spots that aren't super great at the top of this draft, but if you're Arizona or Washington, both of whom have three third-round picks, which positions do you think are worth mining in the back half of the top 100 in this class?
I mean, I think this is when we have the running back conversation. Because I doubt we have a running back drafted top 50 this year. And that's only happened one time ever in the history of the NFL draft. So it's pretty rare. Now, we'll see. Maybe one of these guys sneaks up there for a team that really wants to get their guy. But between, let's just say, the start of the third round and the end of the fourth round, there's like 10 backs that I think are all worthy of that spot. So even though it's not a great running back class in terms of high-end talent, there's no Bijan Robinson, there's no Jahmyr Gibbs, I like a lot of these guys, and I'm excited to see how early they come off the board. I think the Cowboys with that late second-round pick makes a lot of sense. Jonathan Brooks from Texas, even coming off the ACL, love that fit. But how early does Jim Harbaugh take Blake Corum? Where does Trey Benson go? Braylon Allen, Wisconsin. Jalen Wright, Tennessee. Marshawn Lloyd, USC. Bucky Irving, Oregon. And all these guys are different with what they offer. Some, you know, Bucky Irving is very different than what Braylon Allen offers. So the roles will be a little bit different. Two other names that I want to throw out there. Some of my favorite mid-round players: Isaac Garendo from Louisville and Tyrone Tracy from Purdue. These are two of my favorite mid-round players overall, but both running backs, both kind of in that Tony Pollard range in the fourth round, where I think they're going to end up being steals for whoever drafts them in that range. But again, I think, you know, this question, I think it really hinges on the runs too, right? Because last year we talked about tight end flying off the board in day two, and that's what happened. But
and then Laporta was the 34th pick when we thought he might go in the 60s somewhere.
And then what happens? Luke Schoonmaker goes in the second round. Brenton Strange goes in the second round. And it's like, okay, didn't necessarily see that, but you know, sometimes where a team starts to run accelerates how these guys come off the board. So running back will be interesting this year.
The funniest one's always the second tier quarterback or the third tier quarterback run. That's always my favorite.
What was the round three quarterback? Wasn't it Kyle Trask? And then two of them were drafted almost immediately after
Davis Mills. Yes,
that's right. That's right. The Kellen Mond, Davis Mills run.
That was the one I was thinking of. I always love those runs because it happens every draft.
Speaking of quarterbacks, let's shift our focus here to the quarterbacks. Spoiler alert. You want to do yours? Do you want to do a different one?
No, I was going to say the running back one is interesting because I've had the same conclusion as Dane. It's like I suck one into my top 50, Trey Benson. Because I am comfortable with his medicals. So that's me with no inside information. That's just me going, I like the guy on film. He doesn't look like he has medicals. Yeah, he tested well.
This is sound process. Dane, can you confirm that's how most NFL teams do it? I don't know. He looks like he's healthy.
I'm updating my draft guide right now. Nate's stamp of approval on the knee.
Nate's medicals. Okay. Nate's medicals passes it. Yes, I am. Hi, Dr. Nick.
Let's shift to the quarterbacks here. Just spoiler alert, in this space next week, we're doing our quarterback deep dive. So we're not going to go super deep in this conversation right now because we're going to spend a ton of time on it a week from now. But Nate, as you're looking at this quarterback class, How does this compare to years past? And we'll start with Williams and May. I'm just curious, when you look at them, they're not only expected to go in the top three, but they're at the top of big boards. You have them 1 and 2, I believe, on yours. Dane, I think you have Drake May in your top 4. So this is not a situation where these guys are getting pushed up. They truly might be some of the best players in the draft. So Nate, when you compare these guys to other number one picks from the past 5 to 10 years, what sort of prospects are we talking about here with Williams and May?
We talk about blue chips and talk about all that. I have, and this is from old grading, I consider these two guys purple chips, which is as high as grade as you basically get. It's not saying there's no perfect prospect, but basically these are as high as I'm going to grade a quarterback. I think Caleb Williams and Drake May are two of the top three or four guys I've ever graded as prospects going into the NFL. Trevor Lawrence. And then I did have a high.
How do they compare to your guys last year?
See, I had Stroud and Ant Richardson as kind of just outside my maybe top five, because I would say the rest of my top five was Fields and Burrow in some way, shape, or form since 2014. I wasn't that high on Goff. I wasn't that high on Wentz. I wasn't that high on Jameis. I wasn't that high on Marcus Mariota. So like even going back to those kind of classes, wasn't as high on those guys or any of these recent guys, which actually kind of is reflected to how quarterbacks are right now.
There was like a dead period for like several years before we got to that 2017 group.
I also had Darnold high. So that's the thing. I had Stroud and Richardson. I would say if I were kind of like thinking on it, probably in that 6, 7, 8 range as guys I've watched over the last 10 years. I was super high on both, but not to this level. I think these guys are both cleaner in the weirdest way. Stroud's tape was pretty clean, but just seeing the ability of Caleb, what he can do in structure, his accuracy, which I'll put as an excellent level accuracy. His clean, when the pocket is clean and he's actually able to operate on time, which that offense did not allow him to do a lot of times.
There's not a lot of that. I just started this week. There's not a lot of that happening.
It went from, I was so high on him, watched him during the season, was starting to get a little lower on him, never wavered, but was fully wavered, but I was like, then you watch him all 22 and you just see him operating from the pocket and seeing all this. He is fantastic on top of all the creation stuff he can do. And he has good arm strength, even very good. But then, okay, so he already shows more creation than Stroud ever did. And I think he's just as accurate as Stroud was.
I think that's why when you're talking about clean, it's a tough word to pin down, but I think projectable in a way, right? And so watching Caleb Williams have to operate in some of the situations he's had to, even if it's a messy thing that you're evaluating, it makes the projection a little cleaner, if that makes sense.
And you talk to any evaluator, it's all about what translates. Like, I think a lot of people will watch a guy throw 40 passes and they go, well, I got to watch all 40. I'd say 18 of those are actually like translatable to the NFL. I'm just making up numbers, but that's what you have to do with Caleb. There's much more translatable stuff than I thought going in. I thought it was going to be more playground football, him running around making plays, which you could see traits. But then when you got to see him work from the pocket, 1, 2, 3, ball out, 1, 2, 3, ball out, 1, 2, 3, hitch, ball out. I was like, oh, shoot, you're a machine. And I underrated that even going in, even after evaluating last year. But okay, that's Williams. May, I actually prefer, he's my 1A to the 1B of Williams. But these guys, again, I just said all that about Williams. May, he's worked from the pocket. I don't want to get ahead of myself because these are whole shows we want to do. But he is a true guy that I think has all the traits on top of the head, you know, the mental side and the stuff that he's already shown and the stuff that can project. That's what these two to me are MVP type upside. You know, again, I'm not saying they're winning year one, winning year two, winning year three, but saying that that's the ceiling that these two have. And I probably only had 4 or 5 guys legit graded like that over 10 years. And I mean, like, you try to be hard on quarterbacks. So that's what I'm trying to just say. It's like, these two are good. They're very, very good prospects.
How do they stack up for you, Dan, compared to guys in recent years?
The best quarterback I've evaluated personally was Joe Burrow. That goes, you know, back 10, 12 years. That's the top guy. But I would say these guys are probably both in my top 6 somewhere. They're pretty high. And Caleb's my 1. I just think he has rare football awareness. What he's done the last few years is just, it's so impressive. Being able to create, also be able to play in structure. I mean, I'm going to repeat a lot of the things that Nate said.
That's why I don't want to do too much.
Summed it up very well. No, I know. We'll save it. And, you know, May, I like a lot. Some of the stuff down the stretch last year concerned me. I mean, he had among these top 6 quarterbacks, he had the fewest number of second half touchdowns this year and the most second half interceptions this year. Now, part of that is him feeling like he had to put the superhero cape on. And this is true for Caleb, too. they were forced to be like, okay, I've got to make something happen because I'm not getting a lot of help here. So, yeah, I mean, you watch some of the NC State tape, you watch the Clemson tape, his receivers are just giving up on routes. His offensive line, just not good enough. And so it was something where you have to divorce him from the situation, evaluate him independently of everything going on around him. And that's not easy to do. It's really tough. And that's why quarterback will always be the toughest position to evaluate. But yeah, both these guys are very high up there for me, just in terms of recent quarterbacks that have come out.
I'm about four games into Caleb Williams. I am both exhilarated and terrified.
Did you do Notre Dame tape yet?
I did not do the Notre Dame tape yet. I haven't seen enough stuff in structure to be able to confidently say what you guys just did. You guys have watched much more than me. So for me, there are moments where he'll pass something up and then do something extraordinary. And I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, there's a play against Oregon where there's a blitz coming off the left side. He passes up the hot, rolls out to his right, and then throws the ball back across his body for a first down. I'm like, well, you did the wrong thing objectively, but what you just did, three people on the planet can do. So I don't know how to square this.
And that was why watching on a TV copy, and during the season, I was kind of just going, man, because I saw the same thing right there. Just going like, man, you passed up that slant. Sweet throw, but you passed up the easy one. It was one when I watched on film. Those show up, but the in-structure stuff showed up more than it was, that's why you got to let it wash all over you. After you watch four, five, six games, and then you're like, okay, I see when you get to that. The Cal game was the game that I was like, this, you're a dude. The Cal defenses are good defense to watch quarterbacks go against because of stuff they do. It's kind of like in the Big Ten, watching a quarterback go against Northwestern. They kind of just make you work. They make you work for it. And watching him go against Cal, it was when I saw him beat two man a couple times with hero throws. That, when I talk about translatable plays from structure off one hitch, just like real no fat in his footwork. That's where the Drew Brees stuff came from for me, which was kind of a bit, but also I just wanted to emphasize this dude is legit accurate, legit high-end accuracy that you strive for these guys. So that's why all that Brees stuff came into.
We'll let that conversation breathe a little bit next week. Let's get to the guys maybe a step down from here, Dane. I wanted to ask you about Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy. There's been a lot of buzz this week, and you were ahead of this, as you always are, that quarterbacks very realistically could go in the top four, that J.J. McCarthy could be pushed up that far. How much of that, in your opinion, is just desperation for answers at the position, and how much of that do you think is justified based on what sort of prospects Daniels and McCarthy are, respectively?
I think it's justified from the perspective that all quarterbacks in the first round have an added tax. Unless you have the top pick, the number one overall pick, you're probably drafting a guy a little bit earlier than they should.
Boy,
at the
isn't
quarterback
it nice.
Position. I mean, yeah, exactly. Any wonder why they're drafting a quarterback number one? You look at, say J.J. McCarthy. Like, he's a much better prospect than Mac Jones, who was drafted 15th overall a couple years ago. And, you know, I get some of the discord with McCarthy because, again, he's – and McCarthy, I get a lot of, well, I'm hesitant about the guys that rise between the end of the season and now. That's – McCarthy was 19 overall in my August top 50. He has been – teams have been buzzing about him for a while now. And you can understand why. With the physical profile, the intangibles, no, they don't put the game on his back and say, hey, go win it for us. But that doesn't mean that he can't do it if his role expands. And so McCarthy is tricky, there's no doubt. With Jaden Daniels, he's so interesting because he's a fifth-year guy. We have to keep that in context. Fifth-year starting compared to Drake May, two-year starter, Caleb Williams, three-year starter. Jaden Daniels has seen a lot. If he was drafted, if he went to the draft after his third year, he would have been drafted in the sixth round, and who knows where he is right now. So we have to keep that all in the context. With Daniels, though, what he did this past year, I'm not going to take anything away from him. He was outstanding. I'm a big believer in explosive plays. He had more explosive plays this season than any other quarterback in history. That's partly true, partly made up, because I don't know how – we can only go back so many years. But I don't think anyone's made more explosive plays than he has.
On record, yeah.
There you go.
I will say, it seems like having Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas might help those numbers.
It does.
What I was about to say, having an offensive line that gave him time and having two top 20 receivers, and then the other two receivers will be drafted next year.
I like the third guy. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Speedster. If, and I always bring this up, if you swapped Drake May and Jaden Daniels, their situations. You put Jaden Daniels on the North Carolina team, Drake May on LSU. I don't know that Drake May wins the Heisman, but I don't think North Carolina wins more games necessarily. I mean, it's tough to do when you look at it from that context, but again, you have to kind of divorce them from the situation and isolate their skill set and, okay, what is going to translate, what won't. But yeah, both these guys, is it an inflation to draft them as high as the top five? Yeah, it is. But most quarterbacks drafted first round are drafted a little bit earlier than they should.
Speaking of inflation, that Penix Knicks tier that I think probably is the third group here. There have been mock drafts as recently as this week that have Penix as a top 12 pick. There are other people that don't think he belongs anywhere near the first round. So, Nate, when you look at these two guys, what kind of prospects are we talking about here? Is this like Will Levis last year, who some considered a top 10 pick, then didn't go in the second round? It's the Kenny Pickett thing where he was pushed up because he was the only quarterback. Like, what level of prospect are you seeing when you look at Michael Penix and Bo Nix?
Actually, I have them graded very similar to how I had Pickett graded, which is more of a early third rounder. That class, man, I just went back and read all my reports on it. And it's just, I just keep coming back to it. It makes me just feel better because I felt like such a hater during that whole offseason. But anyways,
the Malik Willis at number two overall wars were so annoying.
Someone asked, Someone's like, weren't you high on Willis? I was like, third round grade is not quote unquote high on Willis. That is like, I understand the project. But anyways, going by that, that's where I see these guys more up. They are multi-year starters at several schools as well. I think that
Just to clarify, yeah.
Yeah, Nix at Oregon played a completely different style, even though there was flashes they did at Auburn. Auburn, he was super chaotic. He was all over the place. He had some Heineke to him, some of that going around. He still had to play this year where he ducks underneath like an defensive lineman trying to clothesline him and throws the ball. But I thought Oregon did a really good job of keeping him in his lane and keeping him and letting him operate at what he's good at. Good quick game, getting on the out. He's really good throwing on the outside. Throwing over the middle with anticipation. It's up and down. You know, it's not consistent. That's not his game.
Nick's talking about here.
Yes, Nick's I am. Yes. So I thought
could be talking about either of them, really.
But yeah. I know actually I was gonna say actually both of the blemishes are kind of the same. So Nick's, yeah, and Penix, my hesitations with them and why I ding this down, and actually this is some hesitations I have with Daniels as well, is they don't really work consistently over the middle. And that usually shows anticipation. That usually shows that you have some balls, you know, some I'm going to throw it over there. I'm going to beat this zone coverage. I'm going to beat this tight man-to-man coverage, and I'm going to beat it with timing. So when those guys, I see them more as just underneath throwers, especially Nick's. A lot more screens and quick game and just getting the ball out of his hands, maybe create a little bit, but not that true, like, you're a dude. Like, I didn't really see a lot of translatable plays where it's like he's making the hard, difficult throw. Maybe one or two a game, like a backside dig. But then you watch the top two guys, they're doing that a dozen, 14, 15 times a game. So that's why I'm a little lower. And same with Penix with Washington. He does not work consistently over the middle. He's not very good at it. I don't really care about guys' throwing styles and everything like that. As long as the ball gets out on time and gets there, it's just that's something I've learned. Just it's more about footwork. Getting to his footwork, it can get very elongated. He needs a big platform in the pocket. It's kind of like how Byron Leftwich needed that. Kind of like a big area to operate. He never creates or scrambles. Everything is 1-2-3 ball out, or it's kind of done, ball away. So just that, and medicals and multi-year starter, where I don't see that improvement. If you're a four-year starter at multiple schools and good offenses, and you're still hesitating to progress on some plays, or you're not seeing the second or third progression, that's when my alarm bells start going off, because you should see the ascension like Daniels made, as opposed to these two guys. I just kind of see them more as interesting high-end backups.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC. Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Talking about four quarterbacks potentially in the top 10, wide receiver is another spot where a lot of these guys are crammed into the top 10. Going back over the last few years, 2022, we had three guys that went in the top 11, Dane. But even that, it felt like they got pushed up a little bit. We weren't sure if Drake London would be a top 10 pick. We weren't sure if Chris Olave would go 11th overall. With this group, with the top three that we're talking about here, they seem like definitive top 10 talents. When you're thinking about how Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison as a group compared to years past, is there another class that this reminds you of at all?
Just all the discourse recently about wide receiver one, is it Malik Nabers, is it Marvin Harrison Jr.? It kind of reminds me of the Julio Jones, AJ Green, when those two guys were coming out. These are clearly top 10 guys.
Yeah, two of the best wide receiver prospects of the last 15 years.
No doubt. And so that's how, for me, these, and I will include all three into this conversation, but I do have Harrison, then Nabers, and then Odunze third, but I do think it's fair to include all three in this mix. They're three of the best players in this draft. I think it is hard to name the best players without including them, and it's a good year to need a receiver early, and several of these teams do, so we're going to see them go pretty quickly.
The group that I compared them to when I was looking back through just recent history, 2021, where you had Jamar Chase, who is always like a top five prospect. That's kind of how Marvin Harrison Jr. feels. You had Jalen Waddle, who's just the explosive play waiting to happen. I know Nabers stylistically is a little different than that, but he's that explosive element. And then the guy who's just solid, you can set your watch to at production, Devontae Smith was in that draft, and Rome Odunze kind of feels like that. And all those three guys went in the top 10. So there's been a few of these, but Nate, I can't remember a group like this where it just felt like they're how you stack them up could be different. They could go as high. The fact that the Bears have to be worried about whether the third receiver will make it to 9 in this draft, it just feels like this is a different sort of group when we're talking about these talents.
And I'm glad you brought up the 2022 one where it's like, yeah, those guys, I liked all three of those guys, London, Wilson, and Olave. I think you had Wilson 1 that year, Dane. I had London 1, yeah. And we both like Olave. But I did think those guys got inflated a little bit, like you just pointed out, Robert. These guys are all top 10 guys, like easy graded top 10 guys. And I talk about being hard on quarterbacks. I feel like I'm hard on receivers, but this has been so easy watching these guys. The three flavors is what's so cool about them. Having premium guys with size too. You just brought up Chase, Waddle, and Devontae Smith. That's the other thing. Nabers isn't overwhelmingly big, but he's still, 5'11", 6 foot.
Not an exception in the way that those guys were exceptions.
He's your normal Z size. Devontae Smith is 170. Waddle was 181, I believe he was. And then Chase wasn't overly large, overly tall or have long arms. He just was very, very strong and proved my ass wrong right away. But I think the 2014 class is the one that, I could see the most comparisons to, where it's just a lot of flavors. Some high-end talent, and then also just some other guys that are going to be interesting. That was the Brandon Cooks class.
That class is interesting because that, in a lot of ways, also mirrors this, where Sammy Watkins, people forget what sort of prospect Sammy Watkins is. The Bills traded a future first-round pick to move up for Sammy Watkins, and while that wasn't smart at the time when you look at value, he was that type of guy. He went in the top five, and Mike Evans was, again, an explosive play waiting to happen. Like, if you think about what he was at Texas A&M, he was just a different sort of beast. And then Beckham went 12th. There was a lot of guys in that draft. I think we forget about that one because so many receivers have come off the board early lately.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a good example of how not to trade back if you're the Browns. Because they moved back from 4 and then, got Justin Gilbert? Yeah. So that worked out. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the Manziel draft as well. It was Justin Gilbert, Johnny Manziel.
Oh, every two first round pick bounce draft is always just a nice little surprise, nice little box of chocolates. That class, Sammy Watkins, freshman year, Sammy Watkins. It was one of the all time freshman seasons. He was incredible. So that's a great reminder of that class.
Does it matter to you guys that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not working out at all pro day or combine, not just the 40, but not working out at all for NFL teams. Does that factor in at all, do you think, with any decisions being made about these guys?
I got a thing called tape and film and him playing in all those games and him dominating in all those games. So I'm okay.
Does that matter? That does matter. Okay.
I appreciate guys asserting their leverage when they can, but I'm curious what you think, Dane. If there is a tight race between him and Neighbors for some of these teams, is this a tiebreaker of sorts in a way that maybe it shouldn't be, but are teams going to look at this with a little bit of a critical lens because they might have these guys bunched up?
I'd be shocked. I really would. I mean, I think that you love them or you like them a lot. It's one of those two things. Right. And I really don't think that you going out and catching passes at a pro day is going to make all that much of a difference when, again, put on the tape, you know what he is. Yeah, if you're Marvin Harrison Jr., what's the point of risking injury? You know, he's talking to these teams. He knows there's not something that they want to see from him. There's not a specific route that he has not run that you're worried about. There's nothing that is left to see that you can't find on the tape. So no, I think it's humorous that, you know, you see on Twitter, oh, this is gonna, that changes wide receiver one. No, guys, come on. Whatever you thought of Harrison based off the tape and Neighbors based off the tape, that's how you're gonna feel on draft day. So yeah, I don't think it moves the needle at all.
No, it's not like he's coming from a old Art Briles offense where I always see him running go balls and hitches and slants. It's like you said, Dane, he runs a full route tree from the slot.
Speaking of Brown's two first round outcomes, Corey Coleman into that conversation.
Oh, I know. So, but that's the difference is Corey Coleman. Yeah. I want to see you run routes. Even a guy like Laquan Treadwell from Ole Miss. Okay. You're not running a huge route tree there. So I want to see you running more. Are you fast off the ball? I've seen Harrison torch guys from the slot, outside, vertically, short, catching yak bubbles. The only thing I think he is not exceptional at is he's not awesome like with the ball in his hands. He's not going to juke a lot of guys. He's just a splitter and he gets north. Okay. What am I going to see on film? Okay, let's get some guys in pads. And can you juke this guy in the box? It's like, yeah, I'm not going to see that. Like,
your Maserati doesn't have the trunk space that you're looking for.
I'm sorry. Yeah. He's not, just watch him, guys. He's so clean. He's such a fun prospect.
Dan, as we get past these top three, how would you characterize the rest of the group? Are there different sort of flavors? Are there a bunch of guys you think are first round talents? Like, what does it happen? What happens when you get past the top 10?
So most of the teams that I talked to had the same top four, maybe in different order, but the same top four. Those three guys we were talking about with Marvin Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze, but also Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU in there as well. And then that's where the fun starts, because after the top four, there's like eight receivers that are all over the place, depending on who you talk to, maybe even 10 receivers. Just about what you're looking for. All these guys are a little bit different. And okay, for example, I was talking to a scout the other day, had the exact same grade on Brian Thomas as he did Ricky Pearsall, the wide receiver from Florida. Different players, but you know, they offer something different, but he had the same grade on them. And so you have a guy like Xavier Worthy from Texas. Teams are very hot and cold on him. I know I'm lower on him. Nate, did he make your top 50?
He did, but it was a cover my ass one. It was a 4-2-1. See, that's where Robert goes, hey, smart. I know, I snuck him in, but it's like, that one's, no, I think I'm at a 49. But
had him at 46, Dane, in your latest big board. Yeah.
And I had him at, 49. I had him at 49.
Dane has him at 46 because he believes it. You have him at 49 because you're a coward.
My write-up on him is hilarious. It's like everybody else is positive, maybe one negative line. His is like one positive line, like 4-2-1, it's 4-2-1. And it's like, you know, he's a body catcher. He's 165. You know, he's a pretty good route runner, I guess. Yeah, he's my 49th guy. Sorry, Xavier.
Because, you see the speed on tape, but it doesn't equate to explosive plays. And so it really, yeah, Worthy's tough. You and I are both going to be much lower on him than I think most will be out there. Yeah.
Projecting even a little bit further here, 2 weeks from now, we're going to dig into the pass catchers in a big way. So I don't think we have to tread this territory too much because we're going to spend a lot of time 2 weeks from now talking about the playmakers available in this draft. This next one, I was thinking about this morning, just because we have so many guys in the top 10 that people are excited about, you know, players that we do think are blue chip type guys. So I wanted to ask you, Dane, is there a Will Anderson Jr. in this draft? And what I mean by that is the Texans gave up a future first for Will Anderson. And I don't think anyone's worried about that right now. Part of that is because they're picking in the 20s, but part of that is because Will Anderson Jr. feels like a foundational player. Is there a prospect in this draft that you'd give up that sort of future capital for in the right situation? Somebody you're picking outside the top 10, you'd be willing to make that sort of jump up for this guy?
I think the top three receivers that we talked about, and even though this is a deep receiver class and we're going to be talking a lot about these guys in the second, third round, if you can get one of these top three, it can change your win-loss record next year as early as their rookie year. And I tell you, an intriguing team for this is Pittsburgh. If you can package some picks to get one of these top three receivers, we've seen this franchise do it before. They moved up 10, 11 spots to get Troy Polamalu. They did it.
Devin Bush.
Well, that one didn't quite work out, but they've done it.
They did it recently.
Omar Khan, he's, second year now as GM, second draft as GM. We don't quite know how aggressive he would be for something like that, but, and I don't think they're going to trade a future one necessarily. They need that in case the quarterback situation doesn't work out with the current state of what they're doing. But now that Deontay Johnson's gone, the Steelers become a lot more interesting. And if they're fine just sticking and picking a Brian Thomas or an Adonai Mitchell, then I get it. But if you can go get one of these top three guys, I think they're worth moving up for.
That's where I went. I thought the same exact thing. I said one of the three receivers. That's where I could see one make a splash, especially the teams involved and where they could maybe sit. Your Bears. It seems like everyone's itching to move up the Bears, including myself.
But the Bears are out of picks. That's my only problem with this is that, and I wonder how much of their thought process trading for Keenan Allen was with the thought of, we don't know if we're going to be able to get one of these guys. Like they might be hot enough that we don't end up getting one at nine, but I keep hanging out to hope that they have that extra two from Carolina next year. And would they be willing to wield that in some way if it meant going up and getting one, if they felt like they had to?
I don't think Chris Ballard would do it, but the Colts would be another interesting one. If one of those receivers got to eight or whatever to move up.
All right. Well, why don't we do this, right? Okay. Jacksonville. We've seen all this buzz about what might happen with Brandon Ayuk and whether they can trade for somebody. They lose out on Calvin Ridley. Can Jacksonville go from 17 to 7 and go get one of these guys for a future first round pick? And would that be worth it?
Man, I think so. I think these guys are worth it. I really do. I think they can be Jamar Chase level impact players for your team right away. And they have that type of impact potential. So I don't know, Nate, if you're Jacksonville, is that something you would think of pulling the trigger?
He can't be throwing a Gabe Davis for
Nate. Nate's the wrong person to ask about this.
I am. Right. There's like five subjects I'm a terrible person to ask. I'm like, try to be unbiased about certain things. Like, Nate, would you pay Dak Prescott? Sorry. No, just, I abstain from answering the question, sir. I'm biased. But what Dane's saying is I'm with him, is that I think that like that Colts range, that Jacksonville range is that if, hey, Falcons, you want to get that defensive guy a little later and you want some a little more collateral, you want a little more something there, like that eight spot, maybe the Bears are going like, okay, well, if the receiver's there, I think they just snatch him up, whatever. But it's like, just saying hypothetically, okay, move it up.
I'm trying to talk myself into that as well. I don't think that would be a guarantee. Based on the way that they've operated and the lack of picks that they have, even if the receiver's there, post Keenan Allen, I don't think it's quite as, and this is based on no information, just like reading the tea leaves, how few picks they have. I don't think you just pencil that in if they can get a lot of capital and move back, because look at what they've done. The high-end picks, they Darnell Wright, they traded that second for Montez Sweat and paid him. Their big, big investments have mostly been up front. And so if they think they need a pass rusher, I don't think it's a guarantee that they'd pick the receiver at nine based on history, even if one was there. Just a hunch.
Yeah. No, I like Dallas Turner. It's just always just, I struggle with him a little bit. It's going like Dallas Turner, Edge, Alabama. I struggle with him sometimes is that he's not overwhelming pass rusher. He's solid, good. He's more of a useful player, a high-end useful player. So it's like, for me, it's like, I know you're going to be a good pro, but I'm not moving up in the top 10 for you. I just keep coming back, going back. He might, it might be wrong here, but I'm just saying that's the type of player. It's not a formerly Chase Young and Nick Bosa. I'm not saying Chase Young, formerly Chase Young. Nick Bosa, those type of talents where it's like, oh yeah, go draft this guy. Will Anderson. Yeah. Getting 10 sacks. I could see that easy. So that it's just the flavor of these guys that it's like, oh, am I going to be aggressive for that type of guy?
Speaking of the conversations you want to opt out of, Nate, what is the pre-draft conversation to this point that has already annoyed you guys? Nate, you can go first.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know I want to steer away from here, but general discussions of quarterback footwork and timing. Everyone just stop. I don't try to be snooty with this. I love everybody just having opinions. I love hearing it from everybody. Stop. Just stop. That's it. I'm annoyed by it so much. Some of the clips that you guys use for this and negatives, I don't respond, but I see it. I see it. I don't have a burner, but I see it. So I just want to get that off my chest. Stop doing it. Stop talking about timing. Stop talking about footwork. Stop talking about progressions. Just stop. That's it. That's all I got. that's number one annoyance.
Let's turn this into a productive conversation. When you're thinking about, when you're watching a guy and you're trying to process what their progressions look like within an offense without understanding how it's being taught and what the offense is, how do you try to bridge that gap in evaluations?
No, that's a good point. The protection, the route depth, and the quarterback footwork are usually all tied in together. You get to the college level, you get some of these air raid guys, some of these, you know, it's a little loose. It's not the tight old school West Coast that you can translate very easily. But looking at route depth is usually, and when a guy is breaking on a route is what I'm usually looking at for quote unquote timing purposes. I also, you know, I have, because of my background, have some, you know, cheats I can look at as far as what the route is. There's only so many lines you can draw, guys. Like, that's why I usually just go high, low, sail, which is just a corner route. It's like, there's only so many ways you can do this. So when you watch these guys one after another go through these routes and go through these things, and if I'm seeing a guy throw the ball before a receiver is even breaking on his route or within the breakage of the route, that's good timing. It doesn't matter what the aesthetics look like. It doesn't matter. I've seen plenty of quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson's a good one, who takes an extra hitch always, but the ball's out early and he has very good arm strength. So it doesn't matter for him. I couldn't do that. Me and Russell Wilson can't operate on the same time because Russell has a better arm than me. I'm bigger and longer. I take a little longer to do those things. So our timing is different, but the ball got there at the same time, if that makes sense. It looks different, but we got there at the same time. So I think that's where I think when I look at it, you really look at the routes, really look when the routes are breaking. That's a huge thing for me when I want to look at real timing. Don't look at a drifting in the pocket or anything like that. That is what I've seen a lot of people constitute as bad footwork, is drifting in the pocket. A lot of quarterbacks do that to work away from pressure that they know is coming.
I would go the other way on this. I think if we've learned anything over the last couple of years for what sort of quarterback traits shine through in the NFL, guys that can drift away from pressure and still make plays are the types of quarterbacks that you're seeking out right now.
Those are the ones that's the one that sent me off. I've seen, it's May is the one that is usually getting dinged for this right now. And I've seen when he's drifting away because he understands protection, guys, and he understands where the pressure is coming from. It's an advanced trait from a redshirt sophomore. So he drifts away and gets the ball out before the guy's breaking on his route. So he's ad-libbing the footwork to work. It all ties together. So when you see it in the flow, when you see a guy breaking two steps on a route and then the ball comes out, that is not good timing. Even if it looks, even if it ends up complete, even if it looks like the defender can't make a play on the ball, proper NFL timing just comes down to that little middle half seconds for all these things. Sorry. Thank you for letting me go on that rant. That
Listen,
was good.
That's what this space is for. Dane, has there been a conversation, whether in general or about a specific prospect in the run-up so far, that has particularly annoyed you in this process?
I mean, there's a long list, but I'll just, the most current has been just pro day times. Schools have come out with their own pro day times. People that attend come out with their own pro day times. There's most times so far off what they actually are. Kamari Lassiter from Georgia, the most recent example, who had a scout text me who was there, ran 4.61, 4.63 in his 40. Now this is a really good player, but obviously 4.61, 4.63 in the 40-yard dash for a corner is not great. And then there was some speculation that he actually ran the low 4.50s. Okay, so I checked with 10 teams and I had 8 get back to me. They were all between 4.59 and 4.65. This is, could one of the teams that were there had a fast finger? Sure. This is a 4.6 player. Okay, like maybe somebody was at 39 yards. It's certainly possible. This is a 4.6 player, and that's okay. I mean, that's why he is a mid-second round pick for me. In my ranking, says his lack of speed was already baked into his ranking. So yeah, the 4.6 does not look great, But that's what he is. And probably should have ran at the combine because that's a faster track. That's a different discussion. But yeah, just the discourse over some pro day times. A lot of these, there's a lot of bad times out there, put it that way.
Nate, is there discourse around a player so far that you think is going to look really silly when we look back a year from now? And the fact that we did this at all?
Like in a negative way?
Yeah, like, just like yeah. I can't believe this is the discussion we're having about this guy. Like, this is going to feel
May,
so silly a year from now.
A little bit with Drake May and Caleb. It's May right now because I think those two are so easily 1-2. Like me being May 1A, that's why I keep trying to emphasize. It's like, I love Caleb. I love both of these guys. I think they're awesome. But the discussion on May has been pretty exhausting. It's been pretty like, I know smokescreen season, it's silly season and all that, but it's like, we doing this really? Are we watching the same thing? Like that, again, I'm not always trying to be snooty on this, but it's like some of the comments are just not connected to what's happening on film. So he feels like a big one to me where I'm like, okay, all right, if that's where we want to go with this, but all right.
Is there anybody for you, Dane, where it feels like the current discourse is a little bit separated from reality?
I mean, I think Brock Bowers a little bit. Just, I think we forget how good this guy was. Like that picture from the Super Bowl of how, like, he's not big. We knew that already. Like, I understand it's a little staggering when you see him next to one of the greatest tight ends of all time.
And one of the most physically imposing tight ends of all time.
Yes, exactly.
Gronk,
like,
6'6",
270. We knew this already.
6'6", 268. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, I just, that felt really over the top.
It wasn't, I want to be clear about this. As someone who reacted to that photo, it wasn't just about the size. It was about the posture. It was about the outfit that he was wearing. Somebody made a joke that it felt like he was about to go to like his coding class or something. Like it really did feel like we were watching a different type of human being standing next to Rob Gronkowski. So while I totally get the actual implications of it, it was very funny to see him with that aesthetic in that moment.
You're like, who knew Phil Collins could run a 4.4?
And there's a big difference between that and the negativity that comes from it, right? Like, yeah, he's not as physically imposing as some of these other guys, but man, he's a good football player. Let's not lose sight of that. I think there's a good chance we look back a year from now and saying, man, just the collective discourse really kind of overthought that.
Some of that happened with Harrison Jr. a little bit too. There's some.
I was waiting for one of you guys to say that, but I wondered if the neighbors Harrison thing was just close enough to reality that you didn't think that we were overthinking Harrison enough right now.
I skipped it because it's more about neighbors, right? It's because how good he is. And like, okay, this is a good example. So Daniel Jeremiah tweeted how he thinks neighbors will be wide receiver one for some teams. And I quote tweeted it and said, facts. You know, Nate and I have been talking about it on the podcast since November, how it's razor thin. Some teams will have him at wide receiver one. And there's so many of those aggregate. I haven't been able to check my Twitter mentions in a week because the aggregate Twitter, like Dove and all, I'm not even going to mention give them free
those
pub.
People.
But they took my tweet and said, oh, he will be wide receiver one for several teams and kind of tweet words here and there. And so I haven't been able to check my Twitter mentions in a week because it's unbelievable.
But you're better off.
There
for
is
it,
discourse in that. Oh, yeah. But I the line that I use every interview that I did at the combine, I think I use the same line. I don't think you can name the top three players in this draft without mentioning both Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. That's just my opinion. But that's how I see these two guys. It's not one clearly being better than the other. It's two really, really good players at the top of the draft.
That is another thing that's annoyed me. This whole, just because there can be two really or three really good prospects at a position. It's not one or the other. It's not one or zero. It's not, man, I really like Nabers. Harrison Jr. sucks. It's like, no, all three of these guys are awesome. Like, and I'm Kunle Ndunze in here. But it's just that's exactly it, Dane. Everything Dane just said, that's another one where it's like, what are you guys doing with Harrison Jr.? It's like, he's awesome. And Nabers is awesome too. And so is Ndunze. Like, you can like all three. I like chocolate and vanilla. I like cats and dogs and reptiles and birds. I like all of them. Animals are cool. So it's like, but that to me is just, that's been a little annoying too. It's where you don't have to drag down a guy just if you prefer. I prefer May. I have yet to drag down Caleb because I know Caleb is awesome. Or I as a prospect, I think he is awesome. So there's no need for me to drag him down. So that, if we're going back to that annoyance question, that's been annoying too. It's like, you don't have to drag guys down just because you like a different guy.
Couple more very quickly here. Dane, is there a player you feel like you're furthest from consensus on as this process has gone along? Somebody that's just like, ah, man, I just don't know if I see it the way that other people are seeing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lower on a few guys, like Xavier Legger from South Carolina. I like him, just not first round high like some other people. Enos Rakestraw from a corner from Missouri. I get what there is to like about him. His physicality, the aggressiveness that he plays with is awesome. But he struggled on tape in terms of speed, and that was confirmed at the combine, 4.51. He's smaller, only 183 pounds. There's some durability questions from college. One career interception in 36 games. I like him. It's just I like him in the late second round, but I see him in the top 25, and that I just can't make that leap. So he's definitely one that comes to mind.
I dropped Rakestraw about 12 spots in my last big board. I think he's going to keep dropping just because all the size speed combination. It's just love the player, you know, his play style. He play inside and out, feistiness. I'm right with you, Dane. He might drop a little bit further for me too. Probably late 40s by once all said and done. Some of the Xavier Worthy hype. We've already talked about that. Jane Daniels a little bit. You know, I see him. I have more of a late first round grade on him, and of course, some have him as QB2 and some have him as QB1, which we'll talk about in a year. And then I would say, in a positive sense, I think I'm way higher on Christian Haynes from UConn, the Connecticut guard, than some others. You know, I have him as an early second round grade. You know, I think maybe he's slotted as more of a third rounder for some, but I really like him. I can see him sneaking up there. It's a guy that just really, really liked as a watch more. And the other one's Jalen Polk, receiver from Washington. I have him in my 30s on my big board. And I just think, he's not a one, but I think he can be a very, very good two in the league. He could have that kind of, I'm not going to compare, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but that type of Robert Woods trajectory where he's just that really nice complimentary receiver that does a lot of things well, inside, outside, blocks, good hands, could go. He tested in the range I hoped he would. I think he ran like a 4.51, Dane, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like somewhere around there. Thank God. If he ran a 4.58, okay, we're getting a little scared here, but he checked that threshold for me. So I really like Jalen Polk a lot. I think he's a very useful receiver.
The last one here, Dan, that I wanted to ask you, whose current standing in mock drafts on your big board is maybe the most surprising to you given where they were when last college football season began?
I think Quinyon Mitchell definitely stands out from Toledo corner, that's been my guy, but the cat's way out of the bag on that yeah. one. So I feel like I can't even claim him
anymore.
I didn't
help you there, I'm sorry. I've been banging it ever since you mentioned him to me. I've just been, look at this guy. Watch this guy.
he's awesome. Marshawn Neyland, pass rusher from Western Michigan. I'm going to let this fly early, but I think he's my pick for who's going to be a surprise first rounder this year.
Ooh.
I think Marshawn Neyland's going to get into the first round, and I never would have thought that in the summer based off of what he put on tape. But he's 6'3", 267 with a 165, 10-yard split. He's explosive. I gave him a second-round tape grade, and then seeing him at the combine, it's like, all right, I think this guy's going to sneak into the first round.
Anybody for you, Nate? Where are you before you started the process and where they are now, which is very different?
Alt was one, and we talked about that progression, but I thought of him as a first rounder, but not now. I have him as like a legit top five guy, which I would never have thought about in the summer. I was like, oh yeah, he's interesting. Quinyon Mitchell was another one came to mind. I would say on the flip side, or actually I even agree with Jane Daniels. Shoot. I looked at him as a day three guy, and I mean, he might go two. I would say Jackson Powers Johnson, unheard of for me until middle of the season. So like going from a nobody to a potential first rounder, I think is a big jump. And I would say on the flip side, going to the differences, a couple of corners. It's Caden King and Kool-Aid McKinstry. Caden King from Penn State and Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama. McKinstry was the number one corner from Alabama entering the season. And then Dane was one of the first people to put Arnold on top of him. And you got kind of smoked for that a little bit. And look at everybody now. And that was in September or October, I think Dane did that. And I agree with it. I like Kool-Aid McKinstry a lot, but it's just that he's gone from a top 15 guy to maybe an early second round type. So he's one that's had that kind of flip of his big board standing.
All right. Well, we're going to have plenty of time to dig into all of these positions with a little bit more depth over the next month or so. And that will start as we talk about this year's quarterback class next Thursday. Very, very excited to dig into that. Very excited to watch more Caleb Williams than I have over the last few days here. That is all we've got for now. Sincerely appreciate you guys listening. As always, if you're watching on YouTube, We have a podcast. You can click in the description below to subscribe to that. It's available on Apple. It's available on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you want, leave us a review. leave us 5 stars on Apple or Spotify if that's where you happen to listen. Would sincerely appreciate the feedback. Would sincerely appreciate the support from all of you if you're longtime listeners. For now, though, that is all we've got. I will be back on Friday. Dane and I are going to talk a little bit more about how free agency shaped this draft class potentially, and maybe some of the things that have shifted over the last couple of weeks of teams as teams have filled some of these needs. We're also going to talk with Brad Spielberger from PFF about this free agent class overall. What can we learn about some of the markets? What can we learn about how some of these teams spent money? So our last little look back at what the first wave and a half of free agency looked like will be coming your way on Friday. And then from then on out, it's going to be a lot of draft talk all of the time here on the Athletic Football Show.
I try not to blow it all out on this show, and I try to rein it back in. I started getting going, so I want to.
You got to take it easy with me right now because I can only handle so much. But we're going to be ramping up here.
Caleb Williams sail route against 2-man. I was like, okay, too far, Nate, too far. Rein it back, This was the idiot's guide. This is not.
I will. It's one of those movies. I'm trying to think of examples of this where somebody gets very smart very quickly. The thing that's coming to mind now is Poor Things because I just watched it again last week. So I'm like, I can't even feed myself right now. Hopefully next week I'm reading Philosophy on the Ship. That's the type of acceleration I'm looking for.
We'll go with The Simpsons. It's Homer taking the crayon out of the brain. We'll go with that.
All right, guys, that's all we got right now. Sincerely appreciate you all listening. We'll be back on Friday. Until then, talk to you soon.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.